Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. My name is Reginald Angusargue. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger. That song right there was done by a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Camp, and it's called This Man. And this program we're going to be doing today, we're going to be focusing on two churches that there's been tremendous scandals running through these churches. Not in any way is this meant as an attack against everyone within that church. Our guest is a retired bishop from the Mormon Church, and also he has family roots from the Mormon Church. My wife and I in the past have told people that we've been sealed within the Mormon Temple. We are not active within the Mormon Church, but our guest wife is in good standing in the Mormon Church. Now, before I introduce our guest, I'd like to say that the word Canada originates from a Native American word meaning village, and I feel as a veteran of the Canadian military that it is my sworn oath to stand tall for all people within the village of Canada, as I feel in a real democracy the power rests in the hands of the people and only the people. I would now like to introduce our guest today, who is a retired aeronautic engineer, mineralogist, and runs a non-profit private investigation company, whose late father, Dr. H. Clyde Davis, was hired in 1953 as the chief technician for the Atomic Energy Commission in the United States. With this said, I'd like to introduce Steve Davis.
Good day, Reg. How are you today and the wonderful people there in Vancouver?
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on, Steve. And before we get to, you know, how much resources are sitting in each region within Canada, you know, there's an extremely important topic that this Co-op Radio has been covering for many years now, and it's been the residential schools. And I will say right now, if it wasn't for Co-op Radio, I feel that this subject right here wouldn't have had a chance to get out. And, you know, with this subject, we know that over 50,000 children have been killed in the residential schools, Native American children. We know that tens of thousands of other children, Native American children, have been sexually, physically abused and tormented. We know that members of the Catholic Church have been involved, members of the United Church have been involved, and other churches, but there's been no mention of the Mormon Church. The first question I have, do you know anything about, you know, any involvement that the Mormon Church may have with the residential schools here in Canada?
Well, the key element that the Canadians have been so connected to the United States Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or like you said, the Mormon Church, has been their Canadian leaders. And the key person who was connected into the residential school system was the Minister of Mines for the Canadian government was N. Eldon Tanner. And here he goes back to the 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s. And by the 1960s, when he was absolutely a great leader for the Canadian operation, he gets called into Salt Lake City to basically become one of the great leaders down there in dealing with the connections of mind control between the United States religion and Canadian people to be tested. In other words, they like to use people as guinea pigs to see how they react to mind control activities.
And that Mr. Tanner was actually from the province of Alberta, and correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, wasn't he involved with the late Manning Sr.'s social credit government?
Well, yeah, N. Eldon Tanner, he was a semi-professional pitcher, and so he was really well recognized there as a pitcher there in the, like you say, in the Alberta area, so he was a sports person. And he was also a wonderful intellectual person who found out how to actually be able to manipulate people through false promises.
And there also, when I was doing my research last night after we had the conversation, I ran across, you pointed me towards doing some research on the Indian Placement, which is a program set up by the Mormon Church, I think in the 40s, all the way to 1996, with when it was finally closed down. And this program right here, you know, what I'd like to know, how does this Indian Placement, how does it involve not only the Mormon Church, but leads right up to tie into the federal Canadian government at the same time?
Well, the key person in the Indian program was Spencer W. Kimball, and he was a banker and insurance man down in southern Arizona, and his family had moved up from Juarez, which is a polygamous organization that everybody's been listening on the news now about all the cartels of Mexico are attacking people through Juarez, Mexico, and whatever because of the corruption that's basically been through secrets of the Mormon CIA operators who would bring in drugs and stuff through their contacts through various communities along the United States-Mexican border. So the key person in the Indian placement program was Spencer Kimball. And like I say, in the 40s, he was a banker down in Safford, Arizona, in Graham County. And he was a stake president, a prominent leader there. And amazingly, how the story got involved with his involvement in the Indian placement program is there was a terrible weather that hit his county, and him being the baker, the insurance adjuster, and also the church leader, basically had a very bad dilemma in the area because of the weather in 1942 wiping out the whole community. He basically convinced his whole community, which is mostly Mormons, to settle on just a few pennies on the settlement with the insurance policies and all. That immediately brought him to the attention of Salt Lake City. And so in 1943, he's called to be an apostle there in Salt Lake City, and he brings up this wisdom of basically controlling people and manipulating people to the basically, trust me, I will never lead you astray. And so the Indian placement program was basically engineered mostly by Spencer Kimball. So when he passed away as president of the church, and he was president of the church from 1974 to 1985, so his replacement, Ezra Taft Benson, basically got up right when he became president of the church and says, hey, we're no longer going to work on the Lamanite program, the Native Americans. And so like you're saying, for the next 10 years or so, basically the Indian placement program was phased out because Spencer Kimball passed away.
And also, I just found in my notes, actually, it was from 1947 to 1996 for the listening audience when this program was in place. And with this program right here, we know that members of the United Church sold off land and other resources that belonged to the Native American communities here in Canada and benefited from it. But how did the Mormon Church, let's say, benefit either financially or physically from the residential schools?
Well, they basically took their Indian placement program, which basically is set up during the school year. In other words, during the school year, they would place these Native American kids, the indigenous people from the various Indian tribes all over the United States and Canada and Mexico, and place them in very successful family organization structures in the Mormon Church. Well, they took that program and basically showed how during the school year they would do mind control tactics of these indigenous kids and basically trained them so when they went back for summer or for the 3 months between the school year, they would basically control their parents and their tribal leaders and tell them how wonderful it is to integrate and bring in this new knowledge and money and technology and stuff. So basically it was a systematic 9 month of brainwashing kids in organized family structure that basically was carried on into the United Church up there with the Indian placement program with the residential schools up there in Canada.
Yeah, because I've noticed through my research last night that it actually did talk about how some Native American children were forcibly confined to boarding schools. And I took the boarding schools, okay, that's residential schools here in Canada. And also I found that it also this program stretched up to Alaska at the same time. So, you know, what I feel, based on what I was reading, what you're telling me right now, Steve, to the people out there that you've watched a program called First Wave, I felt like this program here, Indian Placement Program, is nothing more than the programming of the foot soldiers and the coming wave of the Gual, and Gual being the New World Order or Illuminati, whatever you want to call it. And that's when all these few individuals are sitting in the background that have been assimilating the Native Americans and other people to their way of thinking and allowing the Gual to come in, step in, and grab everything for free. And there's no fight to stop it.
Well, this was the important thing of N. Eldon Tanner with Spencer Kimball back in the 70s and 80s, because the GAO, the General Accounting Office of the United States government, put up 27 satellites. And these 27 satellites are strategically placed to be orbiting around the Earth. And there at Utah State University, there in Logan, Utah, they have a laser beam. And they basically beam up a laser beam to any one of these satellites and basically create a hologram. So basically what was set up by NASA and by the United States government was a way to basically fulfill all of the traditions, the folklores, the visions of olden days by the indigenous people or old scriptures or whatever, basically to have them fulfilled through holograms.
So we're talking about, you know, that 3 days of dark, total darkness, where it's, you know, and day is like a nighttime, that could be with this hologram program, that could have come into effect then.
Well, that was the key thing called, it was called the blue beam process, because what it is, it took a scripture in the Old Testament, it's Zechariah chapter 14, verses 6 and 7. Now, that is basically a scripture that was given, let's say, what, 500, 400 B.C., and basically it was a description of the birth of Christ. So basically when it was a day, night, and a day, basically at the time of the birth of Christ, so what they wanted to do in this Blue Beam project right there in Logan, Utah, they wanted to recreate the day, night, and day, so they're going to illuminate through these gemstones in these satellites. Basically, they're going to light up the whole world, so it would last for a day, night, and a day.
That's just amazing itself. You know, getting back to the natural resources, I know that you and I were going to go from region to region and how much resources are in Canada at this time. We're talking a ballpark figure, estimate number. But before we touch on that, do you feel with the residential schools that, let's say, we know that the United Church benefited from this, right? But, you know, the main question is, do you feel that members of the Mormon Church may have, you know, benefit of, in the way that they may have been able to illegally acquire some of the natural resources from the Native Americans here in Canada?
Well, the key element in Canada is based upon, by law in Canada, it was provincially set up that the anything underneath the ground was the natural resources of the government. And it was local and federal and provincial, basically saying that, okay, you can build your house, you can build your building, you can build a factory, you can do whatever you can on the surface, but the government controls all the natural resources. So this was the key element of N. Eldon Tanner, the Minister of Mines there in Alberta, because the big thing of mining was there in Alberta. And I took many, many trips up there with my father, who basically was the geologist for the United States government, like you said, beginning back in 1953. My dad had 8 airplanes in Salt Lake City Airport in 1953, where he was to map out the whole United States for the mining activities. Well, this passed on down to Mexico, this passed on up into Canada and elsewhere, and the person in charge of it was my dad. And so for umpteen years, as we moved then to Tucson, Arizona, and they're working at the University of Arizona with the organization very close to Mexico, because the key element in this is secrets. And so, like you're saying, they basically did a secret deal with the various Canadian operators, but also with the indigenous people. So they'd come in there, and the biggest element of getting people a lot lax back in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s were alcohol, where they basically would get people drunk into a state that they basically would sign agreements, agree into things when they were basically giving these promises and opportunities and financial things strictly for the case of taking care of the natural resources.
Yeah, we've also heard of that happening, you know, even down in Chile. I remember in the past I've had Jorge Lopendia on as a guest, and he's describing how there's a Native American group down there near Minipaska Lama. The name slips my mind right now. But he was saying that some of the high-up leaders within this tribe were actually, fed an awful lot of alcohol, and then Barrick Gold, representatives of Barrick Gold, was able to illegally acquire some of the land that they had. So that's sad. What it shows is that a few people will use every single, you know, trick in their book to illegally acquire resources from the people. And with that said, what I'd like to do now, I'd like to basically start and go from, let's say, from the East Coast. So we're talking Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland/Labrador. We know that there's coal in that area. We know that there's oil over in Hibernia. What other resources are we talking on the East Coast of Canada? And what are the ballpark estimate number monetarial-wise?
Well, like you know, it's banking. Banking leveraging is really where they bring in the security and collateralizing of the properties and mining operations. So what happens is they go and take out a future gold loan or a future coal processing, or they basically go through the Bank of Nova Scotia. They go through the Bank of Montreal. They go to the Bank of New York. They go through N.M. Rothschild. They're the Bank of England. And they basically get a funding commitment to basically come in and build the mill, process the mine, and basically the only way and process that they are able then to extract this is through future developments of the actual ore. And so, like, let's just take example, the Nova Scotia operation. Nova Scotia, they have a special lake out there on an island. I'm trying to remember it, but I've been invited to go out there and visit it with, because of the indigenous people, with the people there in Nova Scotia. But the Rothschilds from England basically built a castle there many, many, many couple of centuries ago, and they used that as the headquarters of basically doing the secret deals and the secret contracts, basically under the banking operations of securing property. The amount of tonnage, the amount of volume that basically has come out of the Eastern is interesting, because that was the closest province to England. And, of course, we know the operations of all of Canada is that basically the people in Great Britain still believe that Canada is subject unto their crown, under their operation. And so through the manipulation of securing the various properties up in there, but that basically dealt, like what you're saying, is a lesser operation like coal and other mineralization and creating energy and all like that, they would basically secure these properties based upon a loan, on a future loan, and basically collateralize, well, you'll pay this back based upon tonnage. So, I mean, it's such an articulate thing, because nobody knows about it, because they say, well, we just took out a bank loan and the property is secured with that bank loan, and little do people know how much tonnage is being extracted every day.
So based on I know you were handed records by your late father before he passed away in 2006, and these records showed, with minerals within Canada. Let's talk about the East Coast area. You know, what kind of monetary value are we looking at for the East Coast area alone?
Well, the specific thing that I asked my father about the East Coast area through the Nova Scotia contacts of that castle of the Rothschilds, he basically showed me over a 10-year period of time was $14 billion worth of mineral value. And that was basically during the 1980s when he was directly involved because of his capacity in dealing with mineralization for this greater organization called the Federal Reserve System based out of the Cayman Islands. So basically they would come and ask Dr. H. Clyde Davis to come and take a look or to evaluate it. He would then say, oh, yes, there's mineralization. That would trigger a gold loan or, a future operation that would be secured with it. And so like out there, basically through a 10-year period of time, they removed that much of natural resources from the east portion of Canada.
And what about we now know in Hibernia over in the Newfoundland area that they're pulling oil out of the ocean. What kind of monetary value did your father find in reference to the oil, let's say around Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Pinsett Island area? What do they have estimated around there?
Well, he basically said they wanted to do the controlling influence up there in the oil area offshore to control the price. And so that's basically how they do it, through banking. And he told me a figure on the oil that they were extracting and basically sending it away from the Canadian people, away from that through this, like this loan financing program, about $1 billion a year.
So $1 billion a year, let's say, since that began about 1980. So we're looking at, 30 years. So let's say about $30 billion.
Basically on that process, solely on the you're saying, the crude oil processing.
That, and it's, so I want people to think right now, you know, all the listening audience, just think to yourself, how much does it cost for us to get universal health care? Let's say we're paying $30 a month even for it, proper dental, eyewear, prescription drugs, hospital time. How much would it cost for us for that, just that one program alone, as we're going through these numbers? I also want people to think about, at the same time, what about 10%, what it costs of tuition fee right now? Let's say that costs us only 10% in the future. You know, as we're throwing these numbers out, you just got to think to yourself, well, how much would this cost for these two programs alone? And with that said, Steve, I want to move over to the next region, which we're talking Quebec and Ontario. We know about the St. Lawrence Seaway, which connects up Atlantic Canada over to the Great Lakes. And at the same time, we know that the electricity being generated over in part of Quebec is actually powering most of the eastern seaboard. And with that said, what kind of ballpark figure are we looking monetary-wise in regards to the region of Quebec and Ontario for the minerals?
Well, the beautiful thing of, like you're saying, this area of Montreal and the area of Ontario and the Toronto area is the shipping. And they use a mining terminology called Doré bar, D-O-R-E. Doré can be up to 87% pure gold, pure silver, pure copper, whatever mineral, but it'd be treated as dirt. And so they would set up this basically ore structure called a Doré bar, certified by the geologist or certified by the metallurgist, and they'd put them on these barges and be shipped out as shipping as dirt. And so the John Q. public would say, oh, there goes a big shipment of dirt, where it could actually be up to almost 100% precious metals. And with those figures, my dad basically was sort of hesitant, because the shipping operations is basically tied into, of course, you know, the various magistrates that dealt with that type of area, and they would basically classify it as a Doré bar. But he estimated probably $2 to $4 billion each year that would be basically cream on the top, basically on the actual thing that they were pocketing, that is the governmental officials. That was the kickback that would be coming back to the leaders and all, let alone the precious operations. Because of the massive amount of shipping right there where you just described it, he says, well, there's several different organizations that basically do this shipping and operations, and he basically gave me just a ballpark figure of what was coming back and helping at the double books. See, the double books is basically a governmental process of basically showing the people what they get from an actual revenue or a royalty basis. And the other book basically is, oh, hey, this is how we're going to control the people. This is how we're going to money laundering. This is how we're going to justify doing all these things and promises that are so false and so fabricated to John Q. Public. This is why there's been a big fight down here in the United States about socialized medicine, because everybody's going to say, oh, everybody is going to have wonderful health insurance, and anybody just has to go up there to your country and find out how bad the socialized medicine is.
What's happening up here in Canada, it's the public and the private health care, it's like they're battling against each other. And what I'm seeing happening here is the erosion of the universal health care. And what I'd like to see is that, you know, by doing this show, and hopefully in the future when we're able to get the documents in place on the website, we're able to show the people, look, there's where our money can come from to pay for proper universal health care. There's where our money can come from to pay for lower cost of tuition fees. There's where our money can pay for our social housing. There's where our money can come to pay for minimum wage Canada-wide of $18 an hour. People, there's where our money can come to pay for a flat tax, Canada-wide income tax of 5%. We're talking for the individual, 10% for the corporation. You know, people of Canada should realize that we are one of the richest countries in the world in regards to natural resources. Why can't we Canadians benefit off of what God has given us and allow us to create a country where everyone is going to have a better life, better standard of living, and we're able to return Canada back in the hands of the Canadian people only? And that's one thing I keep pushing for. As I finish saying that, Steve, can we now move over? Let's Manitoba and Saskatchewan area, and also into Alberta, the Prairie provinces. We know that we talked about Tanner involvement with the minister of mines and lands. At the same time, we know that the Tarzans, actually, there's about 5% the size of the Tarzans sitting in Saskatchewan right now. Saskatchewan is also responsible for uranium mining, and apparently there's an awful lot of poisoning of the rivers happening in northern Saskatchewan, which is affecting the Native Americans at this time. And at the same time, the Tarzans in Alberta, 60 Minutes was saying, is anywhere from 170 billion barrels of oil all the way up to possibly 2 trillion barrels of oil. Now, in that area alone, let's not talk about the oil for a second. Let's talk about the other stuff, limestone, gold, copper, silver, just the minerals in itself. You know, what ballpark figure did you get from your father?
Well, the thing that made me actually aware of what my father was doing, because he would take me on these various trips in the 70s and 80s, because I was, like you're saying, on my engineering background, he was just strictly a geologist. So he'd actually take me to take me on these trips, and I'd go and I would basically tell him what would be the commercial application, like you're saying about the limestone property and the tar sands and the coal and the other precious metals and whatever, and semi-precious. And so what I did in 1985, 1986, 1987, is I set up operations right there in Lethbridge, Calgary. I set up one there in Vancouver offices. I had an office in Regina, Saskatchewan. I had a factory and a big outlet right there in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And, of course, my other outlet up there in Toronto. And so I would go up there with my contract and contacts was with Route Canada, which is the big major trucking operation, and also with Sears Canada. So I actually had my product being marketed through Sears Canada. And that enabled me basically to go out on the road, to get on the radio stations, to go meet with the news media, basically to give the benefits of what this product that I was manufacturing right there in Winnipeg and Grand Forks, North Dakota, to basically get people to openly talk about their natural resources. Because, like you say, I was the gopher this dad of the geologist of this organization, of the United States and of the Mormon Church, and I guess any other joint venture partner with them, which of course is the Rothschilds, the Federal Reserve, because they needed Clyde Davis to give a mining report. And so when I set up offices in Lethbridge, when I set up offices there in Winnipeg and in Regina, I would basically go to the various business meetings and stuff, and amazingly how they always had a cocktail. And I would always have like a proclaimed Mormon. I told everybody I'm a Christian Mormon. And basically I'd have a Shirley Temple or a ginger ale or whatever in hand. And basically because they knew who my father was, they would be totally openly telling me how happy they were that I was up there, that I was had an operation, that I was working with Sears Canada, that I was working with their people to give back pain and therapy stuff on the factories that I'd actually acquired and set up. And in the discussions that you're saying, they're so openly talking to me about what a great secret deal they have with my father, with the Mormon Church, with the basic way of what they would do with Mormon money. In other words, what basically happens every Sunday night. Sunday night, basically, they're in Salt Lake City. They would get an accounting on what monies that they have brought in from the 30,000 wards and branches and organizations they have all over the world. So Sunday night they would have an actually accounting. And so guess what they would do? They would basically go to the World Bank, they'd go to the International Monetary Fund and find out, well, what funding and stuff has gotten into default. And so they'd go to basically countries like Canada, which really did not have it, but they basically showed what they were doing in other countries like Brazil that had defaulted notes, or Argentina, like you're saying about Chile. And they would take and buy those defaulted closed-down notes that had been issued by the United Nations and basically pay 5 cents on the dollar to buy a non-available paid note. Then they'd go to that country and basically have that country issue brand-new face-valued things of that note. And the Mormon Church would promise that they'll bring in these great retired executives and help promote and get things going. Well, this is what they started doing up there all over Canada. They would call these retired business executives of the Mormon Church to go on a work mission. And they would go in into Lethbridge, and these great executives would basically manage the money laundering that they would be bringing in to go and invest into to get closed down or hurting companies and basically fund the operations of transporting or doing mining development or extraction and all like that. And they would do it basically under contract. And like I say, through a dory bar contract, who knows what they were shipping out. And a lot of the shipments, and especially the big pipeline that they have up there in Lloydminster, there in Alberta, Canada, where they're actually dealing with the heavy oil. The heavy oil is a technology that I brought up there to Canada. This was back in 1985, where you basically do an in situ drill. You put down a special formula down in ground, and it causes an exothermic chemical reaction, and it lessens the viscosity of the oil, and it comes out with a high grade. This is what we introduced back in 1985. And so how successful is the oil business up there in Lloydminster? Well, it's massively producing mass amount of petroleum through heavy oil crude that used to be very similar to like down in Baker, California, where we are actually working with Chevron back in the 70s. And so to give you a financial figure, I think it would be an injustice to the public to tell them what my father knew about it, because my father basically was told, oh, we're in control of basically the natural resources, of letting people here in Canada feel comfort as we provide them a few crumbs and comfort level and socialized medicine and socialized protection and whatever, while we basically control the natural resources of Canada. And we want that to help out our organization, our little club. And that's why I got so upset with my father that, as you know, in 1998, I sued my parents for their DNA.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what... Well, based on all the information that you've gathered from all the individuals you've talked to, you know, what would be a ballpark figure, let's say for the region of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, monetary-wise, just an estimated number?
Oh, in today's dollars, probably $1 billion a month.
A month?
Yeah.
So that's $12 billion a year. Let's times that by, you know, just 30 years alone, and people at home are doing their math. All of a sudden, you're realizing all those little things I was talking about are quite easy. Now let's head up to the north. We're talking Northwest Territories, Yukon, and Inuvik. To the people out there, the federal government ratified a United Nations treaty in 2003. What it said was that Canada... We control only up to about 22.7 kilometers off of our coastline. Unless we can prove with the continental shelf would stretch all the way over, then we can control basically where it'll stretch over to in regards to the island apart. Now, if you take a look at that in the northern part, there's about 100 kilometers from the mainland of Canada all the way up to the Baffin Islands area. And in that, we have the Northwest Passageway that goes through there. So what people have to realize is that our government signed away our territory that belongs to Canada and Canadians out there. And what is the estimated, let's say the estimated monetary value just in that area that you have been informed about there, Steve?
Well, my dad said that still is virgin area, that they're still developing that because of the weather, because of the transportation limitations and all. But he says it's basically half of what they're doing right there in Alberta.
Oh, wow, that's about $6 billion a year. That's interesting in itself. So at the same time, you know, as we're moving over, we also have to remember about the diamonds being, you know, extracted in the north at the same time. And I used to love watching this one TV show that was called Ice Truck Divers, and it showed these truck drivers for only a couple months of the year, they're driving over frozen lakes to deliver the supplies up to these mining camps at this time. They're located up in the northwest Northwest Territories area. But with that said, I'd like to go over to BC. Now, we know about I've always said to everyone, British Columbia, for the last 40 to 50 years, every single government in BC has ran this province to the ground. We can look at every single government that's been in place, Dave Barrett, the Social Credit, the NDP again, and now the Liberals, and each and every government has its own form of scandal / corruption / laws been put in place, which has taken the money from the people. Texada Island, an example. We also had Dallas Hill in here on August 9th from last time we were talking to Steve. He's talking about Stewart, B.C., northern B.C. They walked up. They took a whole entire mountain down, topsoil, loaded it onto a barge, and shipped it out. Now, what kind of monetary system, value do you think is in place here in the province of British Columbia in regards to natural resources there, Steve?
Well, you've got to also bring in the connection of Vancouver, Canada, be the closest communication to Hong Kong and Asia. Basically, Vancouver is the hot spot of being the launderer of massive amounts of billions, if not trillions, of dollars coming in from Asia, basically coming through the Commonwealth operation. And so they're basically going into public companies, they're going into mining operations and stuff like that. And the beautiful story about mining operations and public companies is that the insiders in Canada have a much more liberal way of inside trading. And they're finally clamping down on that. But I was just there in Vancouver just some weeks ago, and I basically arrived there at your border, and they basically spend nearly an hour going through my whole car trying to see if I have anything coming in, because inside my trunk I had special documents that I've been working with Jorge, one of your key persons in the mining industry there in Vancouver, and I had all this information against Barrick Gold. And when they saw all the information that I had in the connection with Barrick Gold, with all of the politicians in Canada, because by golly, when Brian Mulroney no longer was the prime minister, he and George Bush Sr. basically joined on the counseling of telling Barrick Gold how to operate, especially in Vancouver, with doing natural resources. The figure that my dad gave to me, he said, geez, son, it'd be probably $5 to $10 billion a month, because they're also doing the extraction and operations in Vancouver that would deal with the Asian area. And so there's a vast amount of money that comes in and out of Vancouver, and the poor John Q. public there is just overwhelmed at seeing how a company is one day so great and the next day it's down. I mean, talk about stock manipulation. There's a whole nother ingredient in that about the Vancouver natural resources that very few people even talk about.
Well, just basically doing the rough numbers as you're talking, we're talking about $1.8 trillion over a 30-year period. Now, everyone listening, how much would it cost for those programs that I just mentioned? Now, everyone, at the same time, why are we have HST? Why do we have GST? Why do we have any form of provincial or federal tax at all? You know, what I would like to question every single listener as a Canadian, don't you have any backbone to stand up to the politicians and say, this is our country, this is our resources, this is what the people want, we want our social programs, we want them in place? You know, I'm a capitalist. I admit that. I fully admit that. I believe in free enterprise to a point. I don't believe in monopolies. I believe that anyone has a right to make money. But at the same time, when it comes to natural resources, I believe that the natural resources belong to the people, and the people should share, you know, at a fair number. We're talking maybe, you know, 10% of what's being pulled out. The people should have that put into the public coffers where every single Canadian is entitled to a better life. Now, everyone listening, don't you want to start standing up for your rights? Don't you want to start standing up and saying, we are Canadians. We deserve this. And when I say Canadians, I mean anyone who's born here, anyone who's immigrated here, anyone who resides here. You are Canadian. Native American and non-Native Americans, we are brothers and sisters as we protect our nation of Canada. We have to stop squabbling amongst each other, stop pointing the finger at each other, and start standing together and protect our nation for ourselves. That's what I keep telling people. So what's your thoughts, Steve?
Well, it's just like, as you know, I spent about 12 days down in Australia, and I just got back on last Saturday from Australia, and the day before I left for there, I was on your radio program. And amazingly, when I was down in Australia, which is, of course, a commonwealth just like Canada, I contacted the key people and the news medias and everybody down there concerning the corruption of all this. And amazingly how they basically had their eyes opened up, how the Muslim religion is going massively into many different countries, like the Buddhists, like China, like Japanese, like India. And they're basically setting up little communities all over the Christian organization, the Christian countries, and basically bringing other religious secular operations into communities where they actually are very tightwad, they're very controlled, they're very much in the area of doing their own controls. And this is very, very much how the Mormon Church is operated. They basically get people to go back and bring their, they like they served on a Mormon missionary as a young person between 19 and 21, and they go out there and befriend, and amazingly how selective few come back there and marry into local families and basically set in the indoctrination of that through actually infiltration because of the mind control operation based out of Salt Lake City. It's just amazing to me what the MK Ultra, and you and I have talked about that in the past, where U.S. Congress passed a law back in the 50s, basically to create the Manchurian candidate, and how articulate the most success in this whole operation all throughout the world was with the Mormon Church because they were blindly obedient. So I do appreciate what your thought is about people being sitting back doing nothing, just sitting back and believing that all is well and everything is going to go. And what triggered me is that I basically sat down with my father and I says, okay, Dad, I've gathered all this information on my own nickel. I've set up my own operations out of my own pocket there in Lethbridge, up there in Lloydminster, over there in Vancouver. Okay, Dad, I have actually gone and talked to the people who you have been dealing with under the table. And you know what? They're so much happier to do everything so they can sleep at night. So the one beautiful thing that I believe that what you're doing, Raj, and your beautiful cry to wake up the people is basically say, let's have just open discussion. Let's basically have no more secrets, because the secrets is where the problem happens, because then you're accountable for something that you did not disclose. And so one beautiful thing about this conversation today after my trip to Australia is I had so many wonderful contacts down there to another Commonwealth country and basically controlled by the Rothschilds, absolutely a dictatorship down there in Australia. And I was down there openly showing how Alan Bond, a billionaire, who came and stole the gold mine I bought from my own father, basically when I blew the whistle, guess who loses his billions? Alan Bond. This can happen to any person who has a secret deal, and you know about it. The best way to do it is to make them be accountable, because then they can sleep well, too. And I hope this is what you bring to John Q. Public up there, to stand up and basically say no more secrets.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm bringing right now there, Steve, because what happens is, you know, as you know, you can personally witness that my wife and I have gone through massive persecution, massive intimidation has been done against us. We were exiled from Canada for almost 5 years of our life just over writing a simple book, just over asking a few questions. They sent a veteran of the Canadian military. They stripped Canada from me. I came back, though, with the help of some people from Saskatchewan, some people from Ontario. Yep, I came back, and they asked me, these people that they helped bring me back, they said, well, why didn't you go over to Montreal? I came to British Columbia because I was born in British Columbia. I was raised in British Columbia. This is my land. This is my, basically, home. I came home to help my people, to help all Canadians. And I want everyone out there listening right now to realize you are a Canadian. It's time for us to join together as one. That's what I keep telling people. And, you know, Steve, with that said, what I want to do is I want to take a quick break, throw in just a minute and a half piece, so that way people can, you know, absorb what we said so far. And then what we're going to do is we're going to come back. We're going to continue on with the next subject. I would just like quickly remind people who listen to Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. And I'd ask Steve, you please stay on the line, and we'll be back in about a minute and a half. Welcome back to Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus-Arkew. That piece right there was Robert Redford. I think it was from the movie Lion of the Lamb. Lions for the Lamb, excuse me. A correction there. But I also wanted to quickly say to people, Steve, before I ask you the next question, Steve, I want to tell the listening audience that I'm going to be taking the next show off due to medical reasons. I had a scare, but, you know, I'm okay. I'm going to basically take some time to recover. And what happens is I want the people to know that I live and die for the Canadian people and also for the American people, because I want a better life for the children. The children are the most important thing. By getting this information out, we're protecting the children, but we're protecting the people. And I just wish other people would pick up the sword and follow, you know, and just basically even come sit in this seat right now and let yourself be heard with the exact same stuff or even other stuff. It doesn't matter. Co-op Radio is a beautiful station because of the fact is they allow freedom of speech. They allow people to come in here, become part of programs, and start educating the people. That's what I love about Co-op Radio, is the fact that what happens is all of us can work together. Different ideologies. We may not agree politically, but at the same time, we agree that there is a message of educating the people, enlightening the people, and at the same time, telling the people, finally, start standing up for yourself. Now, with that said, Steve, I wanted to continue on. We only have about five more minutes left, so I wanted to quickly touch on the last part of the interview. You know, we were talking, you sent me some emails that talked about the former governor, late former governor George Romney and the late former president Gerald Ford. You know, how are they basically involved with the sex slavery that went on in the Michigan area?
Well, this was a joint venture between the Mormon Church and the Catholic Church. basically, there was the Mormon Brigham Young University, Ricks College up in Idaho, Hawaii, and they also had all these seminary programs in all the high schools and stuff. And so they basically did a joint mind control operation with all of the Jesuit, the little girl charm schools of the Catholic Church, and especially started right there in Michigan. And the governor's mansion is out on an island, and this is where Governor George Romney basically cut a deal with Gerald Ford, a congressman, and how they basically brought in these Catholic charm school girls and basically trained them and brought them into the level of what the Catholic charm school would do there in Michigan. And then they would have them become a Mormon. When they became 18 years old, they would basically let them join the Mormon church, and through basically the charm school. And I don't know if anybody remembers the book that was printed called Transformation of America by Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips, but she was just an example of what they did in brainwashing Marie Osmond, basically sexually abusing them and basically giving them the opportunity to bring and bring forth sex slaves, these little children, basically, that would be hypnotized and put through the torture of being whatever the person wanted to be as a handler. And so the cornerstone of this was back in the 1960s when Governor George Romney basically wanted to run for president of the United States because he wanted to be like every Mormon wants to be, like Mitt Romney, basically the president of the United States. And they do this through the legacy of what happened by the founder. The founder of the Mormon Church was Joseph Smith, and the year he was assassinated, he was running for president of the United States. He didn't have a ghost of a chance, but guess what? He was claiming that I'm going to be here to clean up the government. And so what a lot of the false promises that are given by a Mitt Romney or by a George Romney or by a Senator Orrin Hatch, all who ran as candidates for president of the United States, and they were basically humbled by what? The people who say, well, you guys are the strongest mind control operation in the world. So the key thing that you wanted to know about is about sex slavery by children is basically the key story was the operation there in Michigan by Governor George Romney.
And how does this involve Joe Biden, who is now the Vice President of the United States of America and the Obama administration?
Well, Joseph Biden from Delaware. Delaware is the key state in the United States for corporation sealing, secret corporations. And it was set up specifically by the Rothschilds back in the Declaration of Independence. So basically, since the beginning of the United States of America, Delaware has been the key corporate state. And they have to go through key specific politicians, and Joe Biden, of course, is the ringleader. You had to get the blessing from Joe Biden, and so that's, why, of course, why he became the running mate to Osama bin Laden, but Barack Obama. Sorry, it was too close of a slip of the tongue. But anyway, they basically had to have a person with the connection to the Rothschilds or this secret organization of corporations, basically to make sure that the president, who is basically a teleprompter reader, basically hold toe, because if he didn't, basically Joe Biden would then become president of the United States.
Yeah, well, we've actually had people in the past talk about President Obama and some of the stuff he's been involved with in regards to the CIA and Afghanistan and other areas, even over in Hawaii, where he was received some teaching when he was growing up in a very influential school. And what it's shown, that he has been, almost like polished through his whole entire life. So there's massive ties over to the bankers. But I wanted to quickly read this one quote. We only have about two more minutes left there, Steve, so I'm going to have you say some information after that. But I wanted to quickly read this quote. This is from the Mormon Sexual Abuse, and there's a lawyer right now called Jeff Anderson of St. Louis, who is nationally recognized for his work representing victims of abuse by clergy. Describes the Mormon church conduct as almost the worst of any religious organization in the country. Most churches have finally caught on that they have a duty to protect their children from pedophiles in the clerical garb, but this church will still destroy records and still deny that it has any responsibility to tell its members the truth. And I wanted to quickly share that one quote. I mean, all we're trying to do today is we're trying to bring light to what's happening within the Mormon Church, just like other people have brought light to the Catholic Church and the United Church, in efforts to allow the people within there to gain the knowledge to finally stand up against these Illuminati, political extremists, Mormon Mafia, whatever you want to call them, and regain, their religion for themselves and provide a better future for their children. And with that said, Steve, we only have about a minute left. Could you quickly leave a website, contact information in that, Steve?
Well, the beautiful thing in the structure of me being a devoted Mormon, and I totally absolute claim publicly that I am the best Mormon because I'm a Christian Mormon. I'm a person who has everything full disclosure, and so I've given a website. It's www.mormonstruth.org. MormonsTruth.org then has a connection to several other of my websites, basically giving a full disclosure upon my own personal testimony that basically everybody needs to have their own personal witness to stand up and have a happy night.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. That was Steve Davis. And again, you are a very excellent guest to have on, a lot of information. And I just want to say to everyone in closing that, it is time for us as Canadians, even the Americans who are listening to this and other nations are going to be listening to this on the internet, it is time for each and every one of us that belong to every different nation to stand up and take back what is the people's. Because if you look at democracy, democracy is of the people, by the people, and for the people, and only the people. At the same time, the corporations are only meant to employ the people. Everyone has a right to go for the golden ring if they want to, but no one has the right to start these monopolies. And that's what we need to basically realize at the same time. So with that said, I just want to tell people that I am standing tall as a veteran of the Canadian military for the Canadian people. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. And, in closing, I want to leave everyone with a song. This gentleman is from Nanaimo. His name is Edward Anderson. Great song. Please, if you're able to go on Facebook, just ask Ed Anderson is his name, and ask him to become your friend. He's a very good singer. And until we meet again, thank you so much, people.
It has come to my attention that things are what they seem. I knew it all along, but I was going with the stream. Like a sheep in a field, I was following along. Now it's time to turn the tables on the ones that done me wrong. Yeah, you'd better run and hide in the bunkers deep inside, the ones you built for yourselves and the elite. You can be as sure as hell, if we catch you by the tail, you're gonna suffer just like the ones you proudly beat. There's a cloud on the horizon, there's something burning down. The sky's lit up with fire as it crashes to the ground. The people scream in anger as they bravely battle on. They really suck it to you as they march and sing along. Yeah, you'd better run and hide in the bunkers deep inside, the ones you built for yourself and the elite. You can be as sure as hell, if we catch you by the tail, you're gonna suffer just like the ones you proudly beat. Stop taking what is ours and give us back our land. Stop bombing decent people you don't understand. Stop taxing on the poor and bailing out the rich. Everyone's entitled to a life without regrets. Yeah, you'd better run and hide in the bunkers deep inside, the ones you built for yourselves and the elite. You can be as sure as hell, if we catch you by the tail, you're gonna suffer just like the ones you proudly beat. Don't take these words lightly, just do what is right, or you find out soon enough you're in for a fight to the bitter end, a war we're fighting for, to give us back our freedom and open up a door. Yeah, you'd better run and hide in the bunkers deep inside, the ones you built for yourself and the elite. You can be as sure as hell, if we catch you by the tail, you're gonna suffer just like the ones you proudly beat.